Welcome back to Business Edge, where we take a hard, practical look at issues shaping Prince Edward Island, the business climate, and our economic future. I'm your host, Blake Doyle, and today we're going to tackle a topic that may not be flashy, but it's absolutely fundamental to Prince Edward Island's growing provincial debt and what it means for taxpayers, small businesses, and the next generation of islanders. It's not a story about numbers, it's a story about priorities, principles, fiscal management, and the very real risk of losing our economic autonomy if we don't correct course. There's been a number of warnings issued over the last number of days, and we'll delve into those in a little bit more detail, but this is the inaugural re-kickoff of the Business Edge 2.0 podcast, converted from both podcast, which is new, but also back into digital format and written words available on the do. So let's jump right into this, the state of the ledger. So our debt increased about 100% in a 10-year period. This is a real concern for our kids or future generations and those who are residing in PEI and the increased burden of managing that debt and the stripping of services that's definitely going to occur if we don't get our fiscal house in order. We've been living beyond our means for quite some time. But the debt per capita has begun to grow and by double digits. So what's all that mean? Well, let's start with the basics. According to the most recent reviews from PEI's Auditor General, Darren Noonan, the island's fiscal position is becoming increasingly fragile. Noonan has flagged concerns around overspending, lack of fiscal controls, and a growing reliance on federal transfers to keep the books balanced. And I think we can say for certain, as long as our hands out, expecting others to manage our financial affairs, we could be in a very shocking surprise. In fact, today Alberta is starting to question that fiscal imbalance and how much money that they are sending to other provinces. So I would not feel very confident waiting on the reliability of that method to ensure that we meet our obligations and our debt obligations. So if we're spending more than we're earning, then we're hoping Ottawa is going to fill a gap. And I think that is a very fragile approach to our fiscal administration. Meanwhile, national watchdogs like the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and independent economic analysts like the Fraser Institute have highlighted PEI's rising public sector spending, a pattern of cost overruns, and a debt trajectory that outpaces population and economic growth. And as we all know, a couple of years ago, Dennis King restricted our volume of immigration. That's affected both the economy, investment, as well as human capital. So we've lost substantially three elements of capital: human capital, investment capital, and knowledge capital. And the impact of post-secondary institutions has been profound. They're going to be relying more heavily on financial contributions from the provincial government, a provincial government that now spends more than they could possibly make, and they're reliant on others for their fiscal management. The entire ecosystem of financial administration is fragile and very unpredictable at the moment. But for an island of our size, this approach is alarming. We don't have a big economic engine like Ontario. We don't have a huge corporate tax base like Alberta. When we overspend, every dollar is carried on the backs of everyday islanders, from young workers to retirees to those struggling to get by day to day. So let's look at the burden on taxpayers, and let's be blunt. Debt is just delayed taxation. And delayed taxation always comes due, usually with interest. The Canadian Taxpayer Federation has repeatedly warned that governments often normalize structural debt. Once that happens, taxpayers see the long-term consequences: higher personal and business taxes, something that PEI can't withstand much more, cuts to essential services, or maybe even more profound, reduced investment in roads, schools, and healthcare. Priorities for the electorate. And this is the group that politicians of many stripes have been trying to appeal to. We've just been a little bit more aggressive in our attempt to appeal and to buy votes recently. So small business, it's the audience of this podcast. We already know what a razor-thin margin feels like. Adding higher taxes or reduced public services to that mix, and the island's competitiveness erodes very fast. And as a result, businesses and rational actors won't continue to invest, won't maintain residency in this province, and will seek opportunities outside of this region. I've got some supporting data here. This is a some information from the Taxpayers Federation, and they've done some research on this. They're equally concerned about the provincial debt. But the total provincial debt has increased by nearly 68% between 2018 and 2019 and today. That debt stood at $2.2 billion in 2018-2019 and will exceed $3.56 billion by the end of this fiscal year. PEI's debt load exceeds the annual government revenues and will hit $3.43 billion this year. That's according to government forecasts. The rapid debt accumulation since 2018-2019 has had a dramatic per capita effect. Every islander owed the equivalent of about $13,950, that's in 2018-2019, and that ballooned to $19,500 this year. I'm not sure how many islanders have that much discretionary income to apply toward our debt, but I could assure you it's a very small segment of our population. So, you know, if you look at the intergenerational impact of this debt accumulation, that's the real moral responsibility. What are we leaving for the next generation of islanders besides a burden? We've had a great party the last few years, but someday that bill is going to come due and someone's going to have to pay for it. Again, the Fraser Institute has been clear on this. Uncontrolled government spending today becomes an intergenerational transfer of risk and burden. Young islanders, your kids, your grandkids will inherit a government that has fewer choices, higher debt servicing costs, less financial flexibility, and much reduced services, making us uncompetitive with other neighboring provinces. For a province already facing demographic pressures, aging population, labor shortages, and the need to attract and retain newcomers, this is a dangerous territory. Financial autonomy erodes slowly and then suddenly. I've got another report here from further consideration from the Taxpayers Federation, basically suggesting that the PEI government appears to have no plan, that they're drifting reasonably aimlessly, and you know, this is a concern. So the provincial government has no plans to return to the budget to balance and plans to continue adding more debt for the next 3 years. Total provincial debt will hit $4.23 billion by 2027-28, according to current government forecasts. That's nearly 100% increase from 2018-2019 and a 19% increase from the end of this year. Debt is forecast to increase about $2,800 per person over the next 3 years, from $19,500, which we just discussed, in 2025-2026 to $22,300 in 2027-2028. So these are concerning, and the concerns that have been raised by not only the Taxpayers Federation, the Fraser Institute, which are fiscally right-of-center ideological think tanks, but this is coming now from the Auditor General, an independent person looking at the financial management of the province. So it's kind of not good. So let's look at what happens with that loss of autonomy and the hidden risks that occur as our debt increases. There's the current interest payments that become unsustainable. I mean, this is interesting. In 2025-2026, the percentage of our GDP that goes toward debt was 5.1%. In 2027-28, it grows to 6.5%. And there's no plan to get this back to budget, to balance, or to manage this going forward. Overspending doesn't just hurt the balance sheet, it limits our independence. And as the Auditor General Noonan has warned, excessive reliance on federal transfers puts PEI in a vulnerable position. When your operating budget depends on someone else's wallet, your policy flexibility shrinks. Those are his comments, and it's a great concern, and I'm glad that somebody within the envelope of government is raising this. You lose the ability to chart your own course. You lose the ability to innovate. You lose the ability to respond to local needs with island-grown solutions. You lose your autonomy. The future is something that all islanders should be focused on, aspirationally looking to grow, not burden future generations. And the way that we're currently moving is just something we can't afford to continue. Here's a little bit more detail from the Taxpayers Federation. Interest payments are taking up a bigger share of the provincial budget every year. Every dime of interest is money that's not being used on core services or tax relief for Islanders struggling to make ends meet. And that's a growing cohort as the debt compression affects our provincial government management. It's certainly similar pressures are affecting day-to-day Islanders and burdening them with less services and less access to service is not only going to compound the frustration, the anxiety, and the desperation that people feel. In 2018-2019, interest charges cost Islanders about $126 million, meaning there's about a 35% increase in debt interest costs over the past 7 years. So these are concerning, and we have to find a solution. So what needs to change? How do we address this? Where do we go from here? So with over $3 billion in debt in 2025, that's 28.8% of the provincial GDP, and that's going to grow to $3.6 billion by 2026, or $4.2 billion in 2027-28. So we're on a very perilous trajectory. There seems to be either an unwillingness to rein in fiscal management or an inability, and either one is not good for the future, and it's not good for the autonomy and the ability for the province to administer their future. So where do we go from here? Well, here's a business-minded approach. We have to restore spending discipline. Governments need to operate with the same fiscal prudence expected of every business and every Islander. And if the people we're electing are unable to do that, maybe we have to reflect on who we're electing. We have to prioritize and measure outcomes. So funding should follow performance, not political optics. And I think we can look in any recent budget, even this fall's operational or capital budget, and there's some really odd political investments, some that aren't sustainable and some that can't even be operated. So why would we make that financial commitment to build infrastructure that probably can't be utilized? We have to strengthen our financial controls. So when the Auditor General repeatedly flags issues, it's time to fix the system, not create excuses for it. Then we have to rebuild our economic autonomy. That means living within the means and reducing structural dependency on federal transfers, something that we have become far too dependent upon and something that is very, very fragile at best. If we want to maintain our autonomy, we have to be independent and we have to be financially independent. So PEI has the talent, the creativity, and the resilience to right this ship. But every year this goes on, it gets more difficult and more painful for somebody to actually implement the solutions that will be required. But we can't continue to pretend that the debt doesn't matter. We need political will and we need fiscal courage, two things that seem to be in significantly short supply recently. There's one more piece here that I found interesting from the Fraser Institute, Ben Elson. And I'll just read a couple of quotes from it. Islanders continue to face high tax rates in key areas. If the province hopes to attract investment in human capital, it must enact a much more ambitious tax reform policy. If you take a comparative look at the marginal tax rates at various income levels, it shows that PEI's personal income tax remains uncompetitive. And income earners, higher income earners, businesses, they're rational. They're fluid and they're flexible. They'll move to where the environment is most appropriate. We see that in the U.S., and I can assure you we'll see that in Canada. And unfortunately, I think we'll see that if we haven't already in Prince Edward Island. So let's look at those tax rates. At $50,000 of annual income, Islanders face a provincial marginal tax rate of 13.47%. That's the third highest in Canada behind Nova Scotia and Newfoundland. In contrast, the rate in Ontario is just 5.05%. Then the gap widens at the higher income levels. At $75,000, PEI's marginal tax rate is 16.67%. It's the highest in the country. At $100,000, the provincial government again leads the pack with a marginal tax rate of 17.5%. Again, for comparison, Ontario, at this income level, faces a 10.98% provincial tax rate. and Alberta pays 10%. What's more, PEI is the only province that does not index its tax bracket. This is something that has been consistently proposed by local think tanks like Chambers of Commerce. So if we can't fix this, we're not going to attract investment, we're not going to attract talent, and we're going to be further stripped of opportunity. So this is challenging, but it's not dire. We can address it, and the longer we leave it, the more complicated and the more challenging the response will be. But again, we need political will, and we need the fiscal courage, and we need leadership. So Prince Edward Island deserves a future built on sound financial footing, not one mortgaged by overspending and avoidable debt. The numbers don't lie. The warnings from the Auditor General, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and the Fraser Institute are not political talking points. They're flashing red lights. It's time to pay attention. It's time to demand accountability. It's time to restore fiscal responsibility in the island we are proud to call home. One more quick comment on our debt management. We have very infrequently had budget balance or surplus in our budgets. It's very easy to accommodate political demands and ensure that you are feathering your nest to get, reelected or whatever the case might be. Just going back in the last maybe 20 years or so, Pat Binns and his tenure between 97 and 2006 did balance a budget several times. I think Pat Mello was the treasurer at the time. Under Wade McLaughlin, 2018-2019, that he did have a small surplus that balanced, or at least wasn't in the debt. And then when Dennis King came in, he actually inherited a strong financial grounding. And 2021-2022, and then the next year, 2022-2023, had a balanced budget or small surplus. And that's it. That was the last time, and our debt has exploded unmanageably and arguably irresponsibly since that time. So that's it for the business edge. This is the first reinvented episode, which is Business Edge 2.0. You can find us on podcast. You can find us electronically if you want to read our content. It's available in a couple of courses, sources, including The Island Do. And this podcast also available if you really need something to listen to. And it's like probably listening to fingernails on chalkboard, but these are perspectives. It's a opinion of the business-minded Business Edge. It's an op-ed piece, and we'll bring challenging subjects with for consideration, I guess, for the listeners, and hopefully some solutions. In this case, if you need government to stop spending beyond their means, there's really only one solution. You put people in place to represent your interests. If you feel they're not representing your interest, let them know. If they refuse to address what you feel are your priorities, they can be replaced. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe politicians are just too susceptible to the demands of constituents, and the intoxication of power is greater than the need to do the right thing, which I'm sure all these elected members know. You can't spend beyond your means consistently, but the intoxication might be too great, and the political pressure might be too great. But at the end of the day, the continuance of overspending is just not only structurally impairing our environment today, you know, increasing our tax rate, decreasing businesses, having a flight of capital, human capital, intellectual capital. But it's, you know, worse than that. It's really impairing our ability to be autonomous, and it's limiting our opportunities of the future generations. That's it for Business Edge. Thank you for taking a little bit of time to spend with us today at this new revised 2.0 format, and hope you tune in again. Thanks so much.